Okay, so we were discussing yesterday trying to figure out the relationship between Berachas HaMitzvah and Berachas HaNedrin. And we saw that in both cases we assume la halacha that they are drabanan, and at the same time there are certain aspects that may be min haTorah or min haSvara, which would have the effect of a din min haTorah perhaps, that both of them had elements of that, probably coming from different places. And therefore, we could have assumed that they were distinct from each other. But, very notably, the Gemara in Maseches Brachos and Daf Nun Aleph certainly seems to connect them as far as learning out from one to the other. And, maybe more to the point, the specific detail of bracha first, whether it's bracha before eating or bracha before the mitzvah, there the Gemara is assuming that one can connect the two to each other, even though we could have very reasonably claimed that they were coming from different places. So just to recap that point, that Gemara in Brachas Daf Nun Aleph was trying to figure out what should this glory be if somebody already ate. Can he continue to make a bracha? And first the Gemara says, well, if he's still eating more, then for sure he should make a bracha. Why should he be exempt just because he had his few bites without a bracha? And then we see that we're talking about, let's say, he doesn't have anything more to eat. So the Gemara raises the question that it seems to be that you can do that because we find that when it comes to tevila, you can make the bracha after the tevila. That's the way it's done. It's machlokas rishonim, what kind of tevila it's referring to. But let's take, for example, the view in the rishonim that is talking about the tevila of conversion. And then the Gemara says it's not a good proof because they're gavra lo chazi. Let's say if we're talking like Tosfos with Rambam, that it's about conversion. So the individual wasn't Jewish before the tevilah, so how are they going to make a bracha? So that's not a fair proof to try to bring for these other situations. So what we noted was that the Gemara, in the whole back and forth, and up to its conclusion included, is making a few interesting points, interesting chidushim, that Berachas HaMitzvah and Berachas HaTorah apparently are related enough that you can seek to understand one from another. And that this point specifically about that the bracha should be before and not after also seems legitimate to look at the two of them together and see if you can derive one from the other. And the only reason that's rejected is because tefillah sager, if that's what we're talking about, or tefillah overall, is a unique situation because it was impossible to have the bracha at the beginning. But removing that from the equation, it does seem that the Gemara is endorsing comparing Berachas HaMitzvah and Berachas HaNedrin, and specifically this aspect of bracha first, action afterwards. So this is even more explicit than the Rambam. That the Rambam in Hilchos Brachos, he mentions the two together, even though later on in Hilchos Brachos, he talks about the din of Overlof Yosan by Berachas HaMitzvah. He teaches that din separately. Nonetheless, when he's talking about Berachas HaNedrin, and he says the bracha specifically has to be before the food, he connects the two, and he says, and that's also the case when it comes to a mitzvah, the bracha has to be before the mitzvah. So what exactly is the relationship between the two? So Rav Soloveitchik suggested, as the Nachum started to point out yesterday, and this, I assume, is probably quoted in many places. It's quoted in the Rishima Shirim to that Daf and Brachos and Daf and Aleph. I remember many years ago seeing it quoted in a Beis Yitzchak article as well. I'm sure it's quoted in other places too. But Rav Soloveitchik understood that there was a relationship between the two in that when it comes to Berachas HaNedrin, so we understand it's about asking for permission, at least on some level, that the Gemara in Maseches Brachos tells us that to eat without a bracha is considered to be like we're stealing from God. It's considered to be like a form of ni'ilah. and that the food's not ours until we ask for permission. So if that's the concept that we have when it comes to Berachas Ananin, and makes it easily understandable why we would have the bracha first, you need to ask permission before you can eat. So to say that that's the same halacha when it comes to Berachas HaMitzvos is interesting. So apparently what we're saying is that yes, even though Zach pointed out yesterday, it's interesting, it's perhaps surprising, you would think when it comes to a mitzvah, the whole point is that we're obligated to do the mitzvah, so we shouldn't have to ask permission. If anything, we should have to ask permission not to do it. Yet, maybe what we see here is that mitzvah experience also requires a hatter, a matir, that we have to ask permission before approaching God. We have to be notel rishus, and maybe that is also connected to the idea of making a bracha before the mitzvah. Now, is there any room to make a bracha after the mitzvah starts, at least b'dieved? So on the one hand, it seems to depend what kind of mitzvah we are talking about, that if the mitzvah is an ongoing process, like tzitzis or tefillin. So there, as the Rambam notes, and as we understand intuitively, so there for sure would make sense that you should be able to make the bracha in the middle, because you have mitzvah after that, so you want to be able to at least include that in the mitzvah. But if the mitzvah is really self-contained and is over, so can you make the bracha afterwards? So the Rambam says no. The Marach or Zaruah, it's quoted in the Haggadah Sashu that he gave you to look at in the beginning of Chulin. So there he says that when it comes to Shlita, you can make the bracha afterwards. So the Salvechik in the Shiurim understood that to reflect that the Marach or Zaruah sees brachos as more a expression of Shabbat, an expression of praise, and that ideally that should be before the mitzvah, but as a function of praise, it could theoretically be after as well. So therefore, there's room to make it afterwards, and it's a different formulation than the Rambam. We could say that maybe the Marach or Zeruah sees there to be both, sees there to be the Matir and the Shabbat, and that even if you miss the opportunity to do the matir, you should still want to have the shabbat component. So it's hard to pin him down as saying he doesn't have the matir aspect. Just all we see from there is that there's enough to still justify the bracha afterwards, where the Rambam would say, no, that's not the case, that once you've missed the mitzvah, so then you can no longer go on and make a bracha. The Shagas Aryeh ties this back to our sugya specifically, to Gemara and Pesachim and Daf Zayin, that Tosfos over there talks about the question which Rishonim struggled with and gave many different answers about how do we work out lulav, that when it comes to lulav, we want to make the bracha right before it, so usually that means that we have the item in hand, but if we have the item in hand, then you're ready otzim, it's agvei nafik bet. So there are a number of different approaches how to deal with that conundrum. What we have adopted in contemporary practice is turning the esrog upside down so that we're not yotze the mitzvah until after the bracha, and then we turn it upside right side up. But Tosfos here mentions that since you still have the na'anuim to follow, so it's still legitimate to make the bracha at that point. And the Shagas Aryeh understands this to be similar to the Marach or Zeruah, because the mitzvah that you have on a primary daraisa level to be yose, that you've already done. So to say that there's still room for the bracha because you still have nanuim ahead of you, but that's not really the ikar mitzvah. The ikar mitzvah you have completed. So here it gets a little complicated also, because clearly we see the nanuim as a continuation of the mitzvah, so much so that when we talk about the standard for chinuch, for at what age is a child ready to learn about the mitzvah of lulav, the Mishnah has the language katan hayodeya l'naneya, when he knows how to shake the lulav. He's got to not just pick it up, so as we know, the youngest children can pick something up and that they could understand. But to have a more complete appreciation of what the mitzvah involves, so that's a child's a little bit older, and therefore the assumption seems to be that at least on some level that does continue the mitzvah. So it seems to be that lulav complicates the picture a little bit as far as whether the mitzvah is really over or whether it's continuing. We started to say yesterday also that the question of when the Gemara says that tevila is not a good source for anything else, it's not a good proof, because there it's impossible to do the bracha before the mitzvah. So the question could be asked, okay, so it's impossible, so then let's not have a bracha. Maybe that's not unprecedented. We find other mitzvahs that don't have brachos. Maybe it's for some similar technical issue. So it doesn't seem to really answer the question, what the Gemara says, what our Gemara says, what the Gemara Bracha says, that, well, in the case of Tevila, there's no choice, so the Bracha has to be after. If the Bracha really doesn't make sense after, so then the fact that you couldn't make it before doesn't justify having it after. So then don't have the Bracha at all. And I think we started to say yesterday, we had to rush it because we were running out of time, but this is particularly a question apparently on the Rashba, because the Rashba, very often quoted, is one of the major go-to sources when you want to figure out why does this mitzvah not have a bracha and that mitzvah does have a bracha. So there are a few sources that are very prominent in this discussion. Probably number one on the list is the Shuvas Rashba, where the Rashba sounds like he's saying, and I want to say it a little bit tentatively because not everyone agrees with what he means, and we'll come back to this point. But the Rashba sounds like he's saying that you don't make a bracha on a mitzvah that involves someone else because maybe they'll leave you hanging. So he's talking specifically about the mitzvah of tzedakah. He says there's no bracha on tzedakah because maybe the ani will turn you down. So if that's what he means, that you have a risk of a bracha levatala because you'll be left hanging, it's reminiscent of the joke, a difficult joke about a Jew, a brisker Jew, who's approached by a terrorist who's about to kill him. So the brisker says, okay, hold on a second, and he makes a bracha of Hashem Malchus, Hashem Kirishonim Asosav Etzivanu Al Kiddush Hashem. And the terrorist gets so freaked out by this display that he runs away. So the brisker chases after him and says, you can't leave me hanging, it's a bracha batala. So if that's a concern, so that's what Rashba seems like he's getting at, that when it comes to tzedakah, maybe the recipient's not going to take it and you'll be left with a empty bracha. So if that's the concern, so apparently from our Gemara, you can have it afterwards. Like the same issue that we have by Tevila, that it doesn't make sense to have the bracha before, so we'll allow it to be after. So if there are other mitzvahs like that, why don't we have the bracha afterward? So one could perhaps answer it by a comment that Rav Salvechik makes, also quoted in the Rishim HaShirim to Brachos. There, when he addresses that line, and this could really answer a lot of the questions, when the Gemara brings in this idea that Tevila is not a good proof because Gavra lo chazi, so they do it afterwards. So there he suggests maybe that's a different kind of Birchas HaMitzvah. That some Birchas HaMitzvahs or most Birchas HaMitzvahs are attached to actions. But there's also a notion of a Birchas HaMitzvah on a chalos, when you create a new status. So to make a bracha on the creation and the existence of that status. So if that's the case, then maybe, let's say, especially if you say it's about gerus, so the bracha is on the gerus, is on the status, so it makes sense to recite that afterwards. So you don't have to necessarily do that beforehand because the status is now a new reality that exists afterwards. So if that's the case, so first of all, that could explain why we don't just say, all right, it's impossible, let's not have the bracha. Here's a different kind of forum for the bracha, or a kind of avenue for the bracha. And then that may not apply to other mitzvahs. It may not apply to tzedakah. So that could also perhaps defend the Rashba, that when the Gemara says you can have the bracha afterwards, maybe it's only for these status kinds of ideas, but not necessarily for every mitzvah. Daniel?
What about if you're, like, Makar's Truma?
Mm-hmm.
You make bracha before you do it.
Right.
So you see that even for something that has a new halach, we would make the bracha over last yasa.
Well, I don't know if it means that you have to make the bracha afterwards. I mean, the bracha is still relevant afterwards. So the Gemara is definitely telling us that we make the bracha after Tevilah because we can't do it before. So what Rav Soloveitchik is explaining is, yes, but it still makes sense afterwards because of the chalos. But if it wasn't for the issue that we couldn't do it before, presumably we'd still do that before also. So if another mitzvah can be done before and has a status issue, we still would prefer to do it before. So that's all one possible approach to the Rashba, assuming that that's what the Rashba means. There are many who disagree that the Rashba is necessarily concerned about such an unlikely situation. There are many reasons, many questions one could ask. You know, first of all, if Ani approaches you in the first place, then the chances he's going to say no seem to be slim. Although I'm sure we've all had experiences where the Ani is unsatisfied with how much you're giving and rejects even after he's asked for the donation. But on the surface, it doesn't seem like it's such a likely shash that there are many circumstances where it's pretty much vadai and more of a vadai than we rely on in other circumstances that the ani will accept the donation. So many suggest the Rashba's getting at something else, and there are other answers to this question, but that's just one possible angle one can pursue within this whole question. I saw that the Tshuva Leva of Ram, Rav Ram Weinfeld, he has a Tshuva, and at the beginning of the Tshuva, he quotes someone as asking the same Kasha against the Rashba from our Gemara, and he then goes on to explain he thinks the Rashba means something else. Maybe we'll, if we have time, we'll come back to what he understands within the Rashba. But to go back to another point that we mentioned, so our Shas, the Bavli, works off the premise that Birchas HaMitzvahs are Drabanan, says that explicitly. But we saw that Talmud Yerushalmi seems to have the position, based on a drasha, that Birchas HaMitzvah are Min HaTorah. And that could impact on a lot of things. It may impact on the question of whether Berachos HaMitzvos are ma'akev or not. So our Gemara in Brachos, in the second parak of Brachos, the Gemara where it says that Berachos HaMitzvos are derabanan, it also says that Brachos are not ma'akev. You can do the mitzvah even without the bracha. So it seems to connect the two, that the Brachos not ma'akev and Brachos are derabanan. So we noted that it would seem like you could say that it doesn't necessarily mean that if brachos were min haTorah, they would be ma'akev. It could just mean that if the bracha came along later, then it had to be that the mitzvah exists without the bracha. But nonetheless, some of the Rishonim do make that inference, the Rosh and others, that the Gemara is telling you that if brachos haTorah were to be min haTorah, so then they would be ma'akev. And that would seem then to be the position of the Yerushalmi, even though there's what debate about this, and Shlomo Zalman Orbach has a tshuva calling that into question, and the like. But there is a very interesting position by the Kajaglover Rav. Kajaglover Rav, I'm sure I've mentioned before, if you're lucky enough to be on campus, and you're lucky enough to go to the fifth floor of the library, you can see his picture on the wall, because the fifth floor of the YU library, which contains many wonderful svarim, was dedicated many years ago in memory of the Kajaglover Rav, so his picture is up there on the wall. So he's the author of the Tshuva Sarah Tzvi, and in the back of the Tshuva Sarah Tzvi, he He has a sefer called Siach HaSadeh, which is about issues of brachos and tefillah and the like. And there, he discusses this position, in the beginning of the Siach HaSadeh, he discusses this position that Yerushalmi says that Berchasat Mitzvah would be Min HaTorah. And he uses that to explain a very often quoted Gemara in the Sefer Nedarim. This is a Gemara that we refer to often in the summertime around Tisha B'Av, one of the major sources regarding the Chorban and the reasoning for the Chorban. So the Gemara has a statement there that why was Yerushalayim destroyed? And that they got the answer that the reason was Al Shelo Berchu Al HaTorah Tchila. So that Gemara is very hard to understand for a number of reasons. That how could it be that with everything that the Jews at that time were guilty of, that missing Berchas HaTorah, that was going to be the reason for the Chorban. And especially if you work off the premise that Berchas HaTorah is Midrabanan. So Shagas Aryeh writes, this is a raya for the position that Berchas HaTorah is Min HaTorah, because how could the Chorban happen because of a mitzvah Midrabanan? So it still doesn't fully answer the question, even if you say it's Daraisa, still why is it significant enough that it should bring about the Chorban? So there's a lot still to figure out about this. But the Kajik Lover of here, he suggests that this is a reference to the position of the Yerushalmi, that Birchas HaMitzvah is Min HaTorah, and that within that framework, that there's an idea of Berchas HaMitzvah Min HaTorah. So why does the Gemara refer to Berchas HaTorah specifically? So he understands it a little differently, that Berchas HaTorah here is a reference to an idea of Min HaTorah, not the position that we normally talk about, that Berchas HaTorah by itself is an obligation of Min HaTorah, but that Berchas HaTorah is a broad fulfillment of the notion of an obligation of Min HaTorah to make Berchas HaMitzvah. And that this idea that there's a Torah requirement to make a Berchas HaMitzvah, that we fulfill once a day at the beginning of the day, and that covers all of the mitzvahs of the day. And that the Chazal mandated aspect, they added more specific brachos over Lasiyasa. And so when we actually are ready to do a mitzvah, so then we have a Berchas HaMitzvah Midrabanan. And there's one general daily version of Berchas HaMitzvah and all the mitzvahs of the day. And that's the part that's Min HaTorah. So then, the way the Kajik Lover says it, so if we assume that Min HaTorah means it's Ma'akev, so if they fail to make that opening part of the day bracha, of Berchas HaTorah on the day's mitzvos, so then no mitzvah that they did counted that day, so that it was everything was deficient because the bracha was ma'akev, so it meant they had no zechuyos. So therefore, you could understand how that leads to the chorban. So perhaps we can take that skeleton and maybe we can tweak it a little bit. And say, first of all, as far as just understanding the Chorban based on this, so what if we understood like this, that the idea of Berchas HaMitzvah Min HaTorah and the idea that Berchas HaTorah covers it for the day, maybe that could be matched with Rav Soloveitchik's idea of a matir, that we need a bracha as a matir to approach God and to engage in his avoda. So it makes sense that Berchas HaTorah fulfills that role. And maybe that's consistent with what his grandfather, Reb Chaim Brisker, said is actually the idea of Berchas HaTorah, that Torah requires a brach. Torah requires some kind of an acknowledgement of God in order to connect. So if that's the case, then failing to make that statement at the beginning of the day differently than the Kaddish Glover said it, that makes all the brachos not work, makes all the mitzvahs not work because the brachos ma'akev. But maybe it has a different kind of spiritual impact. That failing to ask God for permission for the avoda is basically taking away the spiritual nature of all the mitzvahs, and it turns them all into non-inspired ritual, non-spiritual ritual, or into non-spiritual experiences. And therefore, as much as they could have gone through the motion, but it was lacking that aspect of avoda, so we could understand perhaps how that could connect to the Chorban more than any other Aveira or Bittul Mitzvah. But also to take it to the next step, so we could say that what if we break down Berachos HaMitzvah into a few components. So there is the idea of a matir, as the Kaddish Glover and the Rav put together would then say that's one idea. But the next step, as the Kaddish Glover said, Chazal came and they added extra brachos on mitzvot specifically over le'asiyas. So what is the importance of over le'asiyasim? And what does that reflect? So perhaps there is an additional aspect here to brachos on mitzvot. And we find hints to this in some of the Rishonim and elsewhere, that what additional value could there be in a bracha beyond what we've said so far, so other than as a matir and as a general praise, what additional aspect could a bracha bring to a mitzvah, specifically when we require over l'asiyasa? Menachem?
It puts you in the mindset that you're doing the mitzvah for Hashem.
Okay, so yeah, I think that's correct. So, but maybe differently than what we said a minute ago about the matir idea that it has the spiritual component. But you mean in the sense of kavana?
Yeah.
Right, so...
it's like you're recognizing what you're about to do.
Right. Okay. So a bracha could function as a guarantee of kavana. Now, that could have value on a level min haTorah, even if it's not actually a requirement min haTorah, in a couple of ways. Because when we talk about kavana, so it is a machlokus in the Gemara whether mitzvos require kavana, and that's actually still an unresolved machlokus. It's not really clear. It's a whole shiur in itself. Probably talk about it in the context of Arvei Pesachim, so we could find time next month to talk about it. But the idea, it's not really clear, l'maskana, whether mitzvot need kavana or not. But whether or not mitzvot require kavana, certainly pretty much everyone would agree that ideally we should have kavana sa mitzvah before performing it. So the bracha could have a value in establishing kavana whether or not we actually require kavana for a mitzvah. So making a bracha over le'asiyasan could serve that impact. And it could also, to go a little further, it could say that it has an additional aspect. That when we talk about kavana, we mean a few things. We don't only mean one thing. And so we could mean kavana of awareness of doing a mitzvah. So you want to recite a bracha in order to know that you are doing a mitzvah, the shame mitzvah. And you also want to have kavana of understanding what the mitzvah is about. And to whatever extent something can put you in the mindset of having a little more perspective on the individual mitzvah, separate from just the idea that I'm doing a mitzvah, that I'm doing this mitzvah, which is about whatever it's about. So perhaps that is also included in the notion of a berachas mitzvah. And that will get us in to the whole discussion that the Gemara has and the Rishonim build on about nusach. Right? Why do we care so much about how exactly a bracha is formulated, whether it is the question of le or al, and the various meanings that are attached to le and al, or whether it is the specific choice verb that is used in every case. And that's going to have tremendous impact on our sugya, the whole discussion, the Rishonim. Why do we talk about biur, whether it's al biur or levair, but why talk about biur at all? What are we including with that? So as you've seen, if you're looking at Makaros, that there are so many diukim and messages that come just from the choice of verb. So there seems to be a whole inyan within brachos that they are helping us appreciate what the nature of the mitzvah is. And that, we presumably have to say, is parallel but different to what you find by Berachos Hananim. That when it comes to Berachos Hananim, so there is a dual structure also. There's a general matir that you need to get rishus to be nana from this world. And that you shouldn't have to require such specificity in brachos. If I remember correctly, I think with Rosenberg wrote an article printed in one of the YU publications that shahakol is a kind of bracha in terms of brachos hananim that affects that in a general sense, that once you recite a shahakol, you're not in violation of nanim olam hazeh b'lo bracha. But then there's an additional component that we have to be specific in terms of identifying the hanah. So we understand that also, because there, where it's an expression of gratitude to the Ribbono Shel Olam for the hanah that he's providing, so anytime you thank somebody for a gift, they appreciate it if you could be more specific about what you recognize about this gift. And that when you write a thank you note, you can just write thank you for your gift, or you can write thank you so much for this gift, which I appreciate for this reason, and it was so thoughtful. They clearly appreciate that more. So if the idea is that we want to acknowledge HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chesed to us, so it has a whole added dimension when we don't just say thanks, but we identify the different kinds of hana, that itself takes on meaning also. So when it comes to mitzvos, the idea that we have even more attention, in a sense, to what a mitzvah should contain, what the language should be, so it seems like that's parallel to Berachos Hananim, but coming from a different place. And presumably it is because it helps us to understand what exactly the mitzvah is about and to connect to what its message is. And all of this could be relevant to what the Gemara says, that mitoch brechosa shaladam nikrim tamid chacham hu, the idea that a person's Torah scholar status is identified through the way he makes brachos, could tie into this idea that the bracha conveys in the way you make the bracha and the words, the choice, that the Gemara sometimes talks about different amarayim making different kinds of brachos, the idea that it reflects a certain level of understanding and approach to the mitzvah, so that perhaps could also reflect itself here. So all of the discussion that we'll have to see more of about the choice of nusach habracha could also tie into that fact, which could also explain the overlap yasin focus when it comes to brachas hamitzvah for an additional reason. And so, yes, you want to do it first because of the matir component, but you also want to do it first because it puts us in a frame of mind to be doing the mitzvah, the shem mitzvah, and to be doing the mitzvah with the specific themes that this mitzvah has. So far, so good? Everyone following? So, if we wanted to keep this within the Kadjuk lever, so he had said that the Overlas Yasan is an additional component that Chazal came and instituted. But you could say that this also could be contained even within the Daraisa level, according to the Yerushalmi, based on the Rashi and Kisavo that we spoke about yesterday. And that, just to refresh on that point, that we mentioned the Rashi in our favorite second Aliyah in Kisavo. So Rashi comments, and we talk about Vidui Meiser, So Rashi quotes the idea that lo shachachti, I didn't forget to make a bracha. And all the mafarshim get very worked up, starting with the Re'im and many others, that how could the pasuk be talking about that brachas and mitzvos are midrabbanan? So we noted that it could work well that Rashi is actually quoting a Gemara in the Yerushalmi Maisa Sheni. So the Yerushalmi is Lashipaso, that Berchas HaMitzvah are Mehat Torah, so therefore that reference that Rashi is quoting is based on that premise. There is Pesach Frank, and his Tshuva is also quoted in the volume Hartzvi Al HaTorah, which is a liquid from Rav Pesach Frank's Tshuvas. So he approaches Rashi that way, and he also has an explanation, you can look at over there, why Rashi specifically would identify with that sheet of Yerushalmi and why that would be the path there. So if you want to say that that's the case, that the pasuk in Kisavo means that, lo shachati, I didn't forget to make the bracha, so it probably indicates more, although this really isn't so mukhach, but that the idea of vidui meiser is about statements relating to Meiser. So the issue of reciting a bracha isn't just a generalized obligation in HaTorah to make brachos on the whole concept of mitzvos, but that each mitzvah has a bracha that is specific to its obligation, that a part of doing the mitzvah is to make the bracha also. And therefore, that would seem like it's identified with the mitzvah itself, not just with a general idea. So maybe that also works for this notion that if we're trying to connect to whatever the mitzvah is about, so then part of that connection, whether it's Drabbanan or Min HaTorah, is to recite the bracha that calls our focus to what exactly we're doing. And that may, with subtleties of language, highlight and direct our attention to certain aspects of what's going on. Okay, so far so good. So this could also perhaps be relevant. We said that we've seen throughout today that there is the halacha of overlas yasan really by both berachas hanenin and berachas hamitzvah, and in both cases we have the bracha before whatever action it is. And we saw various parallels. But it could still be that for these additional components, that the halacha of overlas yasan is more important when it comes to berachas hamitzvos than when it comes to berachas hanenin. Because reciting the bracha beforehand focuses us on what exactly we're doing and makes sure that we are doing that l'shem mitzvah. And therefore, that could affect not only that it should be before and not after, but also the halacha that it shouldn't be too much before. It's a halacha that we assume not only should the bracha be over l'asiyasin, but shouldn't be over l'asiyasin, shouldn't be before, but should be immediately before. Which is din by berachas hanenin also, but it seems that when it comes to berachas hamitzvah, there's reason to emphasize that even more. And that could also explain, you have to look into this a little bit, but what happens when there's a conflict? Which one's going to be more directly associated with the action? Right? This comes up, for example, let's say eating on Sukkot. Right, so when you take a bite of bread on Sukkot, so, or you take a bite of cake, so you make both a mizonos and a leishev basuka. So both of those are supposed to be over las yasin. So they're both before the eating. But not only that, we want them to be as close to the eating before as possible. But we got to pick one, because if we're going to recite both, so one is going to be immediately connected and one's going to be one sentence away. So how do we prioritize it, practically speaking? Which one gets closer to the mitzvah? To the eating here in this case, which is the subject of both brachos? So we recite first the brachos hanenin and then the bracha of leishev. So if one of them has to be closer to the action, it's the Berachas HaMitzvah. So perhaps that's consistent with the idea that the Berachas HaMitzvah is what focuses us and directs us towards what's happening. And therefore, it requires a little more attention. It requires even greater prioritization that should be connected to the action. Okay, so far so good? Okay, so this is going to get us now into the whole Nusach issue, which some of which will carry into next time, but let's just say a little bit about it, especially as it gets us into Hanukkah topics. So this morning, we learned Aruch HaShulchan, so we saw a little bit of the question of the Nusach HaBracha for Hadlakas Neres Hanukkah, and how it connects to some theories. The Aruch HaShulchan was focusing on the issue of, which our Gemara talks about already before the Rishonim, the question of whether a mitzvah has to be done personally or can be done through others. So when it comes to Hadlakas Neres Hanukkah, so there we understand it can be done through a shliach. So based on our Gemara, you would think that the proper bracha should be al for Neres Hanukkah. But instead we say lahadlik Neres Hanukkah. So the Aruch HaShulchan, here he quoted the Ran and Ardaf, that's because really we do all have a personal connection even when it's done through a shliach, and that's why the Ran explains why there's a need to be mishtatif for pruta when you're at somebody else's house, because it's more than just having the mitzvah fulfilled through somebody else. You do have a personal involvement. But there are other aspects of the various theories that run up against Neres Hanukkah in a few ways. So one, if you saw the Rush, and so the Rush quotes Rabbeinu Tam, that any mitzvah that is going to be done right now, so there you say, al, and when the mitzvah is kind of an ongoing thing, so then it's lit. So then the question is raised, he talks about the Rush, so what about Neres Hanukkah? So how come that's lahadlik Neres Shul Hanukkah? So to that, he makes reference to the idea that the Gemara says in the second parak of Shabbos, that the Zman for Hadlaka starts from when it gets dark and continues Ad Shetich L'Regel Menashe. So therefore, it seems like it is an ongoing thing. So the Korban Nisano raises the objection that the Gemara does say that it's a dispute in the Gemara, but the conclusion that we paskin is kavsa lo zakukla, that if the candle goes out, you are not obligated to relight it. That ideally it would last that whole time, but the Maisa, if it does go out, your Yotze with the first second. So it sounds like then the mitzvah really is done immediately. And the halacha has to have shear to last the whole time, but it doesn't actually have to light the whole time. Which, I mentioned to my parents the other night, it's kind of an interesting irony that the halacha, we have to have the opposite of the miracle of Hanukkah. That the miracle of Hanukkah was there was insufficient oil and it lasted for 8 days. So if we recreated the miracle of Hanukkah in our homes, we wouldn't be yotze. That if we lit tonight with insufficient oil to last a half hour, we wouldn't be yotze even if a miracle happened and it did last long enough. But if the opposite happened, if we did it with enough, but it blew out right away, it would be yotze. So interesting irony, la halacha would be the opposite of Neis HaChanukah. If we had an actual Neis recreation, we wouldn't be yotze. But, so that's the din, that if it goes out after a second, you're yotze, even though you have to put in enough for it to potentially last. So Harbin Asano says, so then it should be Al because the mitzvah is happening right now. So he makes reference to the idea, it's a line in the Gemara, it's a question how to read it, Dilo Adlik Madlik, that if you haven't lit yet, you have that whole time to light. So that creates a Meshach Zman, that creates a length of time, because if it's not going to be that moment, you have more time. But presumably, you could say maybe a little more smoothly, as the later Sfarim say, there's a tshuva of Rabbi Akiva Eiger about this, that even according to us, that we conclude Kapsula Zafikla, that you're not obligated to relight the menorah if it goes out, but the Ikra Mitzvah is that it should last all that time. And there's an interesting discussion to be had why you're not obligated to relight it. But certainly there is a Akiyum Mitzvah that's happening when it lasts for a half hour. So in essence, it is an ongoing Mitzvah. And it's an interesting technical detail why we don't obligate you to relight it. But we would certainly agree that while it's going on, you still have a Kiyum Mitzvah. And therefore, B'Kiva Eger discusses, and that Shuvi discusses the Machlokas, the Pri Chodesh and El Yirava, if you've already lit one candle and you have still the Mahadrin candles to go on, maybe you can make the Berachos HaMitzvah on the Mahadrin candle. So in the context of that Shuvi, this comes up. So the idea that there is still a continuing Mitzvah, even if you wouldn't be obligated to relight it in order to pursue that, so that presumably makes it valid to use this language of Leh, which for Ben Tam and the Rush is about a continuing mitzvah. Now, another clash that we have with the theories in Erez Chanukah, so we've seen two so far right now, whether it's an ongoing mitzvah and whether it's a mitzvah that's done through others. But there's another aspect that the Rambam focuses on, the very end of Hilchos Brachos. So the Rambam talks about another distinction there, about whether a mitzvah is a absolute chiyuv or not. So if a mitzvah is a real obligation, so then it should be lit. And if it's not an absolute obligation, so then it should be out. So the Ravid has objections to this from a few places. As some of you mentioned, Nach was talking about during Seder, you see how complicated this whole sugi is because you have to graph out a whole chart because all the Rishonim have different theories as to what the rules should be. And then once you posit a rule, you have 100 mitzvahs you have to satisfy. You have to explain how every mitzvah fits into your theory. So it's very, very labidic. So you make a statement like this, that it's about whether the act is obligatory or not. So how does that explain everything? So the Ravid has a number of objections there. And one of his objections is, well, we say, Al Mikra Megillah, right? That's pretty obligatory. And that's not optional, Megillah and Purim. So how come there the language is Al? So the Ravid says, well, maybe you could still fit it in. Here he's being unusually generous to the Rambam. So maybe you could still fit it into his theory that maybe the Rabbanans are on a different level. So when you say that we only say live for an absolute chiyuv, we mean also an absolute chiyuv min haTorah. But a chiyuv mid Rabbanan, like Mikra Megillah, that's still al. So hold on a second. And he's got another problem. So what's the problem? The Hadlik Ner Shel Chanukah, right? So that should be grouped with Mikra Megillah for saying the Rabbanans don't get a lit. So what about the Hadlik Ner Shel Chanukah? That should be in the same category as Mikra Megillah. So he has two possible theories. They're a little difficult to understand, that we need to work on them a little bit more. But one theory is that perhaps it's because the bracha also harkens back to the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore has this deraisa to connect to. Rabbi Shaver has a comment on that rivalry. He says it's not clear that you should make a bracha on that because that the hadlaka could be done al yidei zayis. Yeah, it's an interesting discussion along those lines, but that's one theory that the rivalry has. Daniil, you have a question about that?
Doesn't the Rambam say that the difference between al and lit is dependent on whether or not you're doing it for yourself or for others?
Sometimes, but he also makes this point that certainly, for example. And we're going to have to save this part for next week because it affects also how you understand Bedikas Chametz and Bir Chametz. But here, at the end of Hilchos Brachos, he makes this comment that it connects to how much of an obligation it is. So the Ravid's other approach, which, so it's not 100% clear what he's getting at with this, that perhaps Ner Chanukah is distinguished from Mikra Megillah, that yes, they're both the Rabbanan, but what makes Hanukkah candles special? Mahadran. The fact that there's extra levels, Mahadran and Mahadran, and a Mahadran, that is something more. So we need to figure out exactly what that means, because, okay, that is special about Neres Hanukkah, and we saw some Achronim explain that this is a raya to the idea, which I think we mentioned a little bit, that the Mahadran candles and the menorah are not just Dam Hidr Mitzvah, but they are a reflection of the Ikra Mitzvah expanded. So you see, it's more than that. But still, it's not clear why that would make it more of a chiyuv. And if anything, that's talking about an optional component. The Gemara says that it's voluntary. So why having extra voluntary levels makes the whole thing more of a chiyuv? It's harder to understand, and in fact, that's actually the language that Rabbi there says, ein lo kitzva, it doesn't have a limit. So that's itself emphasizing its optional component. So that I think we need to work on a little bit more. So we have still our work cut out for us, understanding a little bit more about the al and le, but also the Rishonim and later Sfarim and their particular attention to the idea of a bracha by Bir Chametz and its inclusion thereof of Bedika and Srefa and everything in between is what we still have to discuss, and we're going to use that as a grounds for our Chazar also on Sunday. So just to quickly recap, as we said a lot, so we tried to understand the relationship between Berachas HaNeanim and Berachas HaMitzvah as indicated by the Gemara in Brachos and by the Rambam, and the fact that they're not only apparently connected to learn one at the other, but especially in the area of Overlas Yasin. So we noted that Rav Soloveitchik's understanding that the concept of Matir that exists by Berachas HaNeanim apparently applies by Berachas HaMitzvah as well. And that's specifically for the Rambam, who says that if the mitzvah really is discreet and self-contained, then there's no bracha afterwards, as opposed to the Or Zeruah, who says that you can make a bracha afterwards. We talked about different interpretations of the Or Zeruah, whether he understands the bracha to be about Shevach, or also about Shevach, so at least there's something to say afterwards. So that itself, there was a whole discussion. And we noted also the fact that the Gemara allows the bracha on tefillah after the fact because it's not shayach before. So that's still surprising. Why don't we say, let's just leave out a bracha, especially according to the Rashba, who seems to theorize that we don't make brachos on things like tzedakah because it's tali b'das acherim. So that we connected also to what Rav Soloveitchik said about that, specifically about the tefillah, that that's a different kind of bracha. It's a bracha on the status that connects to the mitzvah. And that's what allows it to happen afterwards. So that helps to understand the sugya, why even if overall you couldn't have it, you could have it by there, and that perhaps could sustain the Rashba also. But we also mentioned that many understand the Rashba completely differently, and there's a lot more to say about that for a different time. But if we assume that that's what the Rashba really means, that you can't recite the bracha because you might be left hanging, so perhaps that's the way to reconcile it. Then we talked about the Kadosh Lever Rav's Tshuva, going back to the Yerushalmi, that the Yerushalmi against the Bavli seems to understand that Berachas HaMitzvah are Minhat Torah, and some Rishonim understand that would mean that according to Yerushalmi, Berachas HaMitzvah are Ma'akev. And the Kadosh Lever used that to explain the idea that the Gemara says that Yerushalayim was destroyed because they didn't make Berachas HaTorah. Berachas HaTorah is machlokas, if it's even Daraisa. If it's either way, why should it be such a big deal? So he suggests that maybe it's Daraisa not for the reason it's usually invoked, but that it's Daraisa, the reflection of Yerushalmi, that Berachas HaMitzvah requires a Daraisa expression. But once a day, at the beginning of the day, with Berachas HaTorah, that accomplishes that. And the individual Berachas HaMitzvah that are over Los Yostin, so that's where Chazal came in and did it. So then the Rugged Shovers, the Kajig Lovers' explanation is that the brachos are then ma'akev, so since they didn't make these brachos, so then they didn't have any mitzvos at all, and they had no zchus. So you could say a little bit differently, but following the same framework, that maybe this refers to Soloveitchik's matir idea, that if you don't make a bracha, so you're not asking for permission to come close to God, and that perhaps once a day for the avod of that day, so it makes sense. And missing that means that your whole day's avoda is lacking that religious component. So again, we could understand the mida keneged mida, that could lead to the churban, and being separated from the Beit HaMikdash would actually fit very well in that particular sense. But then, so what about the part that Chazal had of over Los Yosin? So we know that over Los Yosin makes sense as a matir, but also an additional component that maybe it's there for kavana purposes. So kavana has a couple different aspects to it. The machlokis, whether mitzvahs need kavana or not, but everyone agrees that should have kavana for mitzvahs. So it helps to establish that what you're doing is a mitzvah. But also, it helps to get the specific kavana involved in every mitzvah and to understand what each mitzvah is about. And that's where we get into the whole idea that there is a focus on the nusach, whether al or le, and what verb we use is all something that flows from that. And so also that to say it's specific to the mitzvah, that notion on a deraisa level could also explain Rashi's citation of the Yerushalmi in Kerparshas Kisavo, that part of Vidui Meiser is to say Lo Shachachti Levarach Aleha, that seems to be something specific to Meiser, then if it's included in the Vidui, not a general Chiyuv of Berachas HaMitzvah, but perhaps that reflects that idea that it has to connect to what the mitzvah is itself. And then we noted also that means that while Nenan and Berachas HaMitzvah both have a focus on Over Los Yosin for the Matir reason, but also to connect us to what's going on. So that also explains the importance of not just being before rather than after, but before and not over, not too far before. And that when we have to choose between the two, let's say if you're eating in the sukkah, so you're making both a bracha on the food and a bracha on the bracha on the mitzvah wins out in the sense of being closer to the eating, that there's a greater need of it really being connected to what's happening in the case of the bracha idea. Well, if it's a matir, so okay, you did it before, it doesn't necessarily have to be as immediately, even though we have that halacha by Berachas HaNenin as well. And then we got into talking a little bit about the different languages, and we noted that Hilchas Hanukkah, in order to get the discussion of Hilchas Hanukkah, so it challenges all the theories each time. Every time you have a theory what al or where should be, so Berachas Neiros Hanukkah get in the way. So just the three contexts in which we mentioned. So the Gemara says that it's relevant to whether it's something you can do yourself, whether you can do through others, or you have to do yourself. So as the Aruch HaShulchan we saw this morning discussed, quoting the Ran and Adaf, so Neiros Hanukkah you can do with the Shliach. So that should be Al rather than Le. He quotes the Ran to the effect that no, that even when you're doing with the Shliach, you are still directly involved more so than with other mitzvahs. And what about the Rebbeinu Tam's idea that the Rush quotes, that if a mitzvah is done immediately, then it should be al rather than le. So isn't Neiros Hanukkah done immediately? So he connects that to Ad Shtich Regel Min Hashuk, and the Korban Asano says, well, what about the fact that you're Yotzei if it goes out right away? Katsu Lo Zokukla. So he explains differently, but the latest Arum suggests that this reflects the fact that their mitzvah is still going on, even if it's a technicality, you're not obligated to relight it. But the mitzvah of Neiros Hanukkah continues. And the third challenge was to the Rambam, when the Rambam says that if it's not an absolute chiyuv, so then it's al, otherwise it's le. So the Ravid says, well, what about Mikra Megillah that gets out? So maybe the Rabbanans are also considered not as Mechuyev. So then flips it back to what about Neres Hanukkah? Is the Rabbanan, but it's still lit? So you had two approaches. Either that's because it connects to the menorah min haTorah, or because the Mahadrim and the Mahadrim makes it more obligatory, even though we had to figure that out because it reflects a optional component, but that makes it more in the category of something that is obligatory, and therefore that justifies the language of lit. So I have still more to say, but I wish Freilich and Chanukah, and also a happy birthday to Tovia, and you should be now entering into reading week, so should be a week of Hatzlacha as you chazer all of your studies. And tomorrow we'll try to get in a little bit of Parsha and related themes, and a lot still to attach to. So I wish you all a wonderful day, Freilich and Chanukah, and a happy birthday to those of you that's relevant, and we look forward to seeing you tomorrow. That's Menachem, a question? Or are you Sweden? Okay.
I was waving it back. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Have a great day.
Okay, I have a question.
Yes, let me just... hold on one second.
The recording has stopped.